Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history is brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. In many ways, the NFL was born on this date. 1920, the NFL, National Football League, organized in Canton, Ohio, with 12 teams paying $100 each to join the American Professional Football Association, which would later be rebranded as the National Football League. And interestingly enough, on this very date, a lot of teams played their first NFL game, but not in the same year. It's just kind of strange because the way the calendar works, but 1937, the first NFL game played in Washington, D.C. The Redskins beat the Giants 13-3. 1950, the 49ers played their first game. They lost 21-17 in that one. 1961, the Vikings played their first game. They beat the Bears 37-13. 1967, the Saints played their first game, losing to the Rams 27-13. Also on this date in 1992, the NFL decided to suspend the World League of American Football for operations. Birthdays on this date, go back to 1927. George Blanda, he played in the NFL from 1949 to 1976 as a kicker and a quarterback into his late 40s. Blanda passed away at the age of 83 in 2010. Passing away, played in his career with the Bears, the Oilers, and the Raiders. A four-time Pro Bowler, one-time first-team All-Pro, and a Hall of Fame inductee in 1981. Best quarterback in franchise history here. Most people would say Mark Brunell. Happy birthday, Mark Brunell. 45 years young today. Also, former Jaguar Aiken Adell celebrating his 36th birthday on this date in football history. Presented by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. If you're in the market for a family dentist or if you need cosmetic work done, call 620-9225 or visit jamesjmccall.com to get a complete list of comprehensive care services that is this date in football history.
Now, the drive around the NFL on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Well, the Jacksonville Jaguars division rival Houston Texans have named a new starting quarterback after just 1 week. Ryan Mallett has been named the starting quarterback this week. Houston is at Carolina on Sunday, so Hoyer had the job for all of three quarters of a football game this year. The 108 modern era candidates for the next Hall of Fame class was released yesterday. Among the first-year nominees are quarterback Brett Favre and wide receiver Terrell Owens. There were also two Jaguars among the 108 nominees. Both Tony Boselli and Jimmy Smith have made the early cut.
By the way, does that mean Bill O'Brien didn't know what he was doing when he named Brian Hoyer the starter? Because he only lasted three quarters of a game. What if there was some guy in a bar stool saying, "It should be Mallett"? Was he actually right about that, or was he?
I don't know.
Did he just get lucky? I don't know.
Yeah. I don't think we're allowed to question those things.
I don't think we can.
Yeah, just what was O'Brien thinking when he went with Hoyer? I mean, was he that PO'd at Mallett?
Now, I didn't watch Hard Knocks, but my guess is that Mallett's too inconsistent. I mean, I looked at the numbers in the preseason. He's very, very dink and dunk guy. He's always had questions about his leadership, his character. You saw, 2 days after the fact, they say you didn't see it on camera so much, but they said he wasn't. Look, you shouldn't be happy about it, but he was pretty visibly not pleased around the Texans complex.
Yeah.
And then he didn't show up for practice 2 days later.
He overslept.
Who oversleeps in training camp or in the preseason?
Told you didn't get the job.
Right. I mean, the timing of it looked bad, and then he came in. He did throw a touchdown. Both of them threw touchdowns to DeAndre Hopkins in the game, but glad to see that they've got a quarterback issue. Already, it's clearly an issue when you decide after three quarters of a game that you've got the wrong guy starting for you.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, the Texans come here in week six. Who knows who's going to be the quarterback?
No. Tom Savage Nation.
It could be.
Savage Nation.
They continue
on IR.
They continue to waste J.J. Watt's career. They're just flushing it down the toilet. Those fans get to go watch it every week. That guy that is as dominant as he is, and they can't find any quarterback competent enough to get them in some kind of real contention with a guy that special on the other side of the ball. As a Jaguars fan, that should just tickle you to death that's going on.
I know that makes you happy. I know that's a message you like to give to Duval Doom, but who just hates J.J. Watt, and you said he should just appreciate how great he is and the fact that the Texans still can't do anything.
Right.
Despite that.
Celebrate
right.
the fact that they keep blowing it.
Right, that he is he's going to be frustrated at the end of a long, good individual standout career, at least we hope. Let's go to the phone, 641-1010, the phone number. James, you're up next on Jaguars Today. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, guys. How y'all doing today?
Good.
Good.
In reference to what Blake said in his comment, I mean, he's a free country. He can say what he want to say, but when you start kind of belittling the fan base, that's a recipe for disaster to me, because when things go good for you, you get positive feedback, but when things going bad for you, you probably should just go ahead and take your lumps. The Jaguars as a whole, I'm still seeing the same things on the field. They dropping balls. They can't get teams off the field in third down, critical third down situations. And, they have breakdown in terms of maybe a run block being missed, pass protection breaking down, kicker missing field goals, the extra point. They're just not good enough to do all these things and win games. And, the fans, From the fan perspective, over a five-year period, the fertility that they are showing now is starting to get historic. So, I mean, they can paint it or spin it any way they want to, but the facts on the field is they're in a bad cycle. They going the wrong way quick. That's my take on it. I welcome y'all comments.
All right, thank you, James. First thing he said, though, about look, I thought Blake did take his lumps. And just to be clear on this, I thought he wasn't saying, hey, the play calling, everything was perfect, fans are idiots. I thought more than anything, he was saying, look, we got to play better. He said, look, why am I going to be mad at a receiver if I throw one 5 feet over the guy's head on another occasion, right? I thought he did take his lumps. I thought he did. I didn't think he was trying to push blame off on anybody. And
sure.
There's probably a big element of, hey, this is my OC, man. I'm pretty, you know, I feel like, first of all, even if he didn't like him, you don't want to get the reputation of being the OC killer, right? So, but I think everything we've gathered being around here this summer, Ryan, it's a better fit with Greg Olsen, with Blake Bortles, right?
Yes.
They see more eye to eye. So I think he was defending his guy, and I think he probably, if he'd given it a 100% chance to do it over, maybe he would have chose a different way of communicating it. But I think the sentiment was basically, look, it's a lot more complex than should we run or pass or throw it to the tall guy when the short guy is covering him, as you pointed out earlier.
Yeah, and the other points the caller makes are something that you're going to monitor on Sunday. Can the receivers catch the ball?
Well, this is the thing. How many times we hear the NFL comes down to three or four plays, right? If they go your way during a game, then you can come out on top. In some games you get, you know, your door's blown off. This was not one of those games. But for how many years now have we heard about, it's two or three plays? Well, it's time to make those game-changing plays, right? It's time to make that big stop on third down, like James talked about, or catch that crucial pass inside the five-yard line that's contested and set yourself up in good position. So, you know, yeah, they may be a few plays away, but it's time to make those plays now.
Yeah, third and six plus, stop them. 18-yard pass, don't leave your feet. That was the start of the second drive. Ended up with
sure.
three and out. You know, and you know, make tackles. So it's, I mean, everything. You know, we're not having to like dig to find things that went wrong and things that need to be corrected for Sunday. They just have to catch it, and they got to block it, and they got to tackle it.
No, it's what we've been talking about all week. It's we started the show because of the comments of Blake Bortles talking a little bit about the play calling, and I agree with you, Ryan. I don't think that was the issue. I think it was a bunch of young players not executing what was there. And, you know, Blake, interestingly enough, a few moments ago before we went to the break, saying that he does feel like they played too cautious on Sunday. And I don't think that goes on the play calling, because it felt like there were three or four opportunities where the ball was in a spot for them to make a big play downfield. And they let him down. The other end of it didn't come through, and who knows how aggressive they get if those plays work. But on Sunday, they weren't working, not because guys weren't schemed open, not because they didn't run the right route to get open. They just didn't make the play when they had that opportunity. The only two guys that did were Denard Robinson and TJ Yeldon. Made plays when there wasn't much to be made a handful of times in that game. Everybody else didn't make plays that were there to be made for them. That's the biggest disappointment coming out of the week.
And part of that, we talk about, hey, somebody needs to make a play, right? Well, at the same time, the defense would be saying, well, stop the play, right? Because we sit there and say, stop Cam on third down. And they're saying, Cam made some plays, right? He found Jericho Cotra. He ran for first downs. That's what Cam does. He's a playmaker. So it kind of goes both ways, too, right? We want to just say, hey, it's that simple. Stop it. Well, that's what other teams are doing to the Jags right now. Somebody's got to use the hackneyed frame, step above the X's and O's, and get it done, right? Just take
do
over.
It.
Take over. Perform in the moment. You're allowed to perform on a higher level than other guys. You're allowed to out-wrestle somebody for the ball. You're allowed to make the simple plays as well. I think those are the ones that are the frustrating.
Oh, yeah.
Right? It's not even the, okay, occasionally, you know, we're gonna pick up some first downs on third and long. That is making a play. But just make the simple ones, and you won't need to make as many of the more contested or complex ones a little bit later on in the football game. Coming back, we'll hear from Gus Bradley and a little bit from Greg Olson as well. It's Jaguars Today. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, and Fat Tony here with you. If you'd like to get in, 641-1010 is the number on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Yeah, we felt the run game was good, certainly. Again, we went, I think, at halftime, we had 70 yards rushing there. You know, our average per rush was good. So, we felt like we were kind of on pace. Again, take away the opening drive, we were on pace there. Felt the balance was good. And, we think that that'll continue to get better as well.
That's Jaguar offensive coordinator Greg Olson talking about the running game in week one. I think running game, Ryan, I think Tony agrees, but I don't want to speak for him. Very important this week because I don't care how Ndamukong Suh played last week. He's a disruptive guy we've seen over the years. He can blow up running games as well as passing games. And what he does is if you have to pay more attention to him, means it's less guys to pay attention to the guys on the outside. Cameron Wake is very dangerous. How many guys can you double team? You know, do you need to give Sam Young help if he's a starter on that side? You're putting Mercedes there. Where's Wake going to be lining up? I think slowing down the intentions of Miami by running successfully early in the football game is critical this week.
Yeah, and it's a big ask for Brandon Linder and Zane Beatles and Stefan Wisniewski, because they're going to be in one-on-one matchups. You can't double-team a guy for 65 snaps.
Right.
And I don't think that's going to be their intention. Redskins came out with a great plan. Cut block him. He's on the ground a couple times. They ran away from him. Made sure he couldn't pursue. And then when they ran to his side, they doubled him. I think his spirit got sapped a little bit because he didn't make one play in that game.
Right.
So if they can, wear them down, the Dolphin defense was on the field a long time last week. And I think ball control is the big key this week.
I'm with you on that, and you got to watch Sue then when you frustrate him, because he'll kick you or step on you or do something else that's dirty because he's a dirty player. I mean, There's no way to sugarcoat it. He is probably the dirtiest player in the National Football League, at least that we know about.
Yeah, Olivier Vernon and Cameron Wake were both limited participants in practice yesterday for the Dolphins. It looks like Wake's probably going to be good enough to go, but Vernon left that game on Sunday hurt with that ankle injury, got
that
rolled up
big.
On. And I know Loggeman came in and talked about it on Tuesday, but he said their backup was just awful. The other guy that came in to replace Vernon, so it's something to keep an eye on over the next couple days at least.
But they do have some standout individuals that you say you got to watch out for this guy, whether it's in that D-line, Brent Grimes back there in a secondary. Jelani Jenkins has turned into a hell of an NFL linebacker as well after coming out of Florida a few years ago. So they've got, to me, some guys that have been difference makers on that side of the football.
Yeah, just like the Dolphins, it would be stupid not to test Jokel if he even plays. The Dolphins or the Jaguars should run at Vernon if he's out there, because you figure he's probably going to be a little gimpy. And I thought Blake looked okay when he was on a design rollout or two to his right, hit Hearns on the third down. I would just do things early in the game that gets Yeldon involved, but also gets your quarterback on the right track, gets him into a rhythm.
Some easy throws.
Yeah.
And confidence.
Yeah. What are you most comfortable with? That kind of stuff. And right. One last talking point is I would try and play some tempo. He looked, Carolina was in a prevent. So what late in the second quarter, but maybe just do a little bit of 2 minute in the first half just to see how it goes.
It is, to me, it's hard to argue that they have looked better more often in that style of offense since Blake took over the reins of the quarterback position than not, and You know, I'm sure there are times they try to do it, but they like to, as Tony, we talked about, get that first down to get it rolling. And if you don't do that early in the drive, if you're going three and out, you're in third and long right away. It's tough to do.
Well, you don't want to come out and run, hurry up, and, you know,
and
you throw three, bam, bam, bam. 20 seconds later, you're punting the ball back for a defense that already has had trouble getting, you know, the Carolina Panthers off the field last week with the weapons that they had on that offense. Miami seems to have more weapons and what they're going to be attacking with on that offensive side. I think you get a first down and then you push tempo if you're the Jaguars at times. And maybe they would have on Sunday too and just couldn't find that rhythm in the second half.
I like this as an automatic alert. Let's say you have first and 10, like Yeldon did a couple of times, gains 11, gains 12. If he gets the first down on that first down run, I go,
I agree with you.
As soon as you remove the sticks, race it up to the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
You see the Patriots do that a lot. They'll shift gears in the middle of a drive. And granted, that's a group that's mostly been around. But I heard Rick talk about the other day, and if he's right, I'm sure he is, Rick Ballew said they had three starters that were rookies on the offensive line. So everyone's got some young players mixed in. Granted, they probably have more veterans or long-in-the-tooth guys, but, you know, get on the same page, get out there, and put stress on the other team.
Well, they get a personnel package that they want on the field against them. And that's what New England does so well, is they make you match up on that first down where you're expecting run, and then when they hit you in the chest with it, they're like, let's go. We can do whatever we want to these guys that got stuck on the field, and the Jaguars just haven't been able to do that here.
All right, here's Gus Bradley talking yesterday, his opening statement to the media.
Good work day as far as our beginning prep on Miami. Really, the things that I would say are different is, you know, we stressed competition throughout, but it was a more challenging environment out there today. I think throughout our position groups, through group work, a little bit more, try to make it a little bit more high stakes type of environment to continue to teach our guys to perform in that type of environment. And then if adversity does hit, how to quickly respond. I thought we did a pretty good job of it. The hopes is tomorrow we do even better. And then we just throughout the week can teach these lessons, you know, exactly how to respond to it. They do a good job of it. You know, don't want to overreact to it, but I think there's some good lessons for our team to learn there. So very pleased with the first day.
I followed up by asking Gus, okay, you're not going to go full contact in practice. How do you make it high stakes? He said more teamwork. You know, they're keeping score, offense, defense, which was weird because I thought they always did that. So, are they trying to spice up practice a little bit, try to, you know, get some guys going? We'll see.
And we'll see about this guy when we get to Sunday, but Marquise Lee practicing on a limited basis yesterday. We'll see what he's doing out there on the practice field today as well. Gus gave an update on the albino tiger, Marquise Lee, yesterday.
It was very good to see him out there. Ran well, you know, different things that we had him doing just to test some things out. The group work he did very well in, so it's a good step.
If he comes out okay tomorrow morning, will he go full tomorrow?
For the whole practice, you're saying? Yeah, he was limited today, but those reps were spread throughout practice. So it might be where he gets more reps.
So he took team reps today?
Yes.
So he may play Sunday?
He may.
Jeez, Tony, let a guy finish his answer, right? I mean, always jumping in with these follow-ups before he's completed a thought.
If Marquise reported to work today feeling good, he shouldn't practice the next 2 days.
Because it might not last.
Because Marquise's problem hasn't been getting hurt in games, it's been getting hurt in practice. You know, now that they've moved site, they're on a turf field today. You know, give him some work, but
he hasn't made it to games, though.
That's the problem. That's
the
problem.
That's the thing, but but when you say it's not, I don't think it's practice that is the fact that it's a practice situation that's causing the injuries. I know you're just kidding about that, but you know, we'd like to see. Maybe
what I said?
Well, you did, basically.
I said, don't practice if he gets hurt in practice.
Right, don't practice if he gets hurt in practice. Right, I think you're being facetious.
I mean, what you can expect on Sunday, you know, 10, 12 snaps.
Yeah.
You know, because, I mean, you know, like Greg Olsen, you know, when he made the Tiger thing, he hasn't had a chance to call anything for
right.
him. So, transition.
Gus, a quick update on Luke Jokel as well.
Jokel will be later on. We'll see how he's done. He's really responded well to the treatment, so that may be one that we find out more later in the week, you know, how he's doing, you know, as far as competing.
I bet they, I mean, he had the boot on yesterday. He said, you know, they'll see on practice. Not looking good. I mean, they'll probably list him as questionable on the injury report tomorrow afternoon. They'll probably say he's going to work out on the field Sunday afternoon, and then they'll rule him out.
Gus Bradley also asked yesterday about rookie safety James Sample and if he's ready to go if needed.
Yeah, that's what our intent is today. And just Josh Evans, I don't know if he said he was sick today, had the flu, so it really amped up more reps for him. You know, that part was a blessing itself because of how many reps he got. So we'll evaluate the film and see where he's at.
But he looked good?
Yeah, he does, yeah.
He was the only strong safety available yesterday.
Right.
So
what's it looking like for Ciprian for this weekend?
It was weird because it's one of those things where he came back and played the whole game after the calf. So I was a little surprised to see him not doing anything yesterday. If he doesn't practice today, then it might be like, okay, maybe it's more serious than we thought.
Something to monitor.
We'll see. Yeah.
All right. Also, Gus talking about Blake Bortles and what kind of job he's done refocusing this week after the loss to Carolina.
I thought, you know, you don't want to relive, you don't want to move on to it, but, you know, in evaluating again yesterday, I thought, you know, one of the things, respond, just like we said to the team, how quickly do you respond from adversity? And, you know, after that interception he threw, I was very pleased with how he responded back. I think we had a screen pass for long yardage. He came back, he threw that dig, it was a drop. And then he came back and he threw another screen. But it was after that, the last two series, I think the 2 minute when that's where we struggled a little bit. So, you know, I think when you look at the overall, his quarterback rating in the first half was 95. But I think that he played with, maybe he was amped up a little bit too much. You know, the throws were overthrows in the red zone and things like that. I thought he settled down. And then, you know, if you go through the whole game, at the end, I think, is one area that he felt like he could have done better. So, you know, overall, solid, you know, but we expect more.
Yeah, got to be better than he was on Sunday.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no question. The first half, if his receivers catch half the catchable balls, it's a better first half.
Yeah.
You're not going to catch them all.
Or Hearns doesn't fumble.
Game.
I mean,
right.
There's a lot of opportunities in the first half of that game that they let slip through their hands. I mean, they get the turnover. They're in positive field position after Hearns gives the ball away. They're inside the 10-yard line, and they can do nothing with it, wind up missing that field goal. I mean, there were opportunities for plays to be made in the first half that they didn't make. Second half was just bad. Gus Bradley also talked about Jared Odrick and how he's feeling in that role that he's playing at that defensive end spot.
You know, he's that big end type, so you might not see a lot of the sack numbers from that spot. You know, our three technique needs to be disruptive. Our Leo needs to be disruptive. So it's, you know, his role is a little bit different, more of a run stopper. But if he can get his, you know, some batted balls, things like that from him, he is in there on nickel. So he does have the ability as a three technique to provide some rush. So, you know, kind of what we expected from him.
I wanted to ask you something, Ryan. I'm surprised I should have asked you about this earlier that I haven't brought it up, but your tweet about Julius Thomas and your expectation for his timetable for return. What are you basing that on? And this was yesterday. Let me read the tweet for folks. You tweeted, so Gus says Thomas, Julius, will be checked on in 2 weeks. That's days before the Week 4 game. In parentheses, I don't think he plays until Week 6 or 7.
I base that on just what they're being too cryptic in their timetables here.
Okay.
That's what I'm basing on mostly is
– educated guess then,
yes,
on your part.
Yes, yes. If they've sort of talked about it in a clunky manner, but if it's 8 weeks from the surgery, then it's Week 6. If it's 8 weeks from the initial injury, it would be Week 4. Well, I think it's a big ask for him to come back, practice 2 days with a cast off or his cast still on and play against Indy, get another week of practice. It just sort of has that buzz or feeling that, okay, they're not telling us definitely for Indy.
Right. It's not like he's right on schedule.
Yeah.
The timetable initially, Dave Caldwell said, Week 4 seemed like a reasonable expectation.
Yeah. And I was told originally that the recheck was supposed to be 2 weeks after the surgery, which would have been Tuesday. Now they're saying it's going to be 2 weeks from now. Okay. Well, to me, that means an 8 week timetable.
Pushing it back even
further. Yeah, like, okay, 8 weeks from the time he got cut.
Right, so we'll see. And I'm not saying that it's certainly an informed, educated guess, but you're speculating based on the context clues that you're getting.
Yeah, and I would be very surprised if he plays in week four, which would be at the Colts. That seems like they're really pushing the timetable up.
Gotcha. Just wanted to make sure I gave you a chance to clarify that remark, because that may have been a talking point yesterday for some on SiriusXM. Let's just say
that was, judging by the retweets, that was a fantasy impact.
Anything said about a skill position guy is going to have that. And I, having seen what happened with your comments about your expectation that the Green Bay Packers might be the Jaguars' opponent next year, I understood it when I read it, what you were saying, but how that became a story. Packers to play in London in 2016. I had a feeling that that was along similar lines here.
Yeah, and I think just about everybody got that. When I said I think that protected me.
I agree with that. Yeah. And I knew, but I figure I've got the opportunity to ask you directly.
Sure.
Why don't we do that? And that's what we did. We'll come back. Fan feedback spotlight. This one trending in about a 97% direction right here today. We just asked you simply, were you bothered about Blake's comments about the fans questioning play calling when he said basically, like a kindergartner trying to talk to a college student, there's a level of complexity that the typical person is not going to realize when you talk about what goes into play calling in the National Football League. Did that bother you? Did it not bother you? Your feedback coming up. We'll get to that momentarily. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, Fat Tony here with you. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
You know, I think he was solid. It was unfortunate. We went in at halftime, really. I think he had a 90-plus quarterback rating at halftime. He had the one sack. And we started out slow, but we felt like he put together some really nice drives there to finish out the half. So we were feeling real good about that. Had the unfortunate decision on the interception, but overall, I thought he did some good things in the first game. And take away that interception, I think there were some real things that we could build upon.
Take away that interception, that'd be fine. By the way, Josh Norman, who intercepted that pass, you see that weird story about poking Alan Hearns in the eye?
No.
Josh Norman, on two separate occasions, meeting with the Carolina media, was bragging about how under the pile, when Alan Hearns fumbled the ball, I assume that's when it was, that I gouged him in the eye, right? I'll admit it. And Hearns then was like, huh, it's interesting. I wear a face shield. I wasn't poked in the eye by anybody. He's lying. Why would he say that? Maybe he poked somebody else in the eye. But he certainly apparently didn't poke Alan Hearns in the eye based on Hearns' accounting of it. I don't know what to make of Josh Norman.
Well, he's yapping.
He is yapping. Yeah,
I guess
yapper.
When you get a pick six and a forced fumble, you sort of earn the right to do that.
He's a waiver as well. That one didn't.
Yeah. That's like a weird part of football culture to me anyway, that because there's a pileup for a ball that you're allowed to become just a wild animal.
Right.
Like, it's just this weird thing, and it's
right,
just accepted
in the sport.
I'll twist
your gonads, I'll bite your nipple, I'll do whatever,
Right, it's just weird.
Yeah. I doubt people bite each other's nipple under there.
It'd be hard to get
access
there.
Access is restricted.
That sounds
weird. Thing happens, though. Yeah, it does, I know. All right, fan feedback spotlight today, Tony. Very pro-Blake. As you would expect, right? Today we asked you, were you bothered at all by Blake's comments about when questioned about fans questioning play calling, how he characterized it as akin to when a kindergartner tries to have a conversation with a college student. What kind of feedback did we get today?
Here's what we got from Paolo. Not at all, because it looks like he didn't really mean to say what he did say. From Irish Jaguar, no, I would hope he's right. From Teal Rising, no, such a non-story. From Scott, I listened via podcast a day late, so I haven't heard it yet, so no. Hashtag British problems. From Stoff, we got, no, it wasn't the play calling that was bad, it was the execution. Blake needs to win and limit the screw-ups. From Jason, I didn't like starting off with two consecutive runs, however, I have no problem with the comments. Lighten up, people. From Harold, no, it's not the analogy that I would have used, but Bortles is exactly right. From Joe, absolutely. He might as well have stolen my juice box at lunch. That's probably my favorite response today. David, I like Blake, but he needs to understand that Jags fans are quite experienced with bad play calling. From Richard, not at all. For one, he's right. Two, I'm glad he doesn't give sugar-coated generic statements. From Daniel, I was not bothered by his comments. In fact, I liked his response. From Cristiano, not at all, but Let's hope he starts executing much better than we understand the play calling. From Black Dog, I heard what was reported about what B2 said and was taken aback. When I heard the actual audio, I was not bothered at all. From Brad, not bothered by it, just wish Blake would stop playing like a kindergartner after throwing a pick six. From David, were the fans wrong when they complimented the good play calling in the preseason? From Eric, yes, it does. I understand where he comes from, but it sounds like the same rhetoric as our last quarterback. I'm sure he's referring to Blaine Gabbert. From Demetrius, in my opinion, it's a red flag for a quarterback to respond to criticism from a fan base that's had little to cheer about. End of story. And from Cam, no, just because you play Madden and it works with Tom Brady doesn't mean it works in the real world.
All right, and that all that's fine. The idea that fans are so unsavvy, I will put it this way. I'm not offended by the comments, but if you think the gulf between what a fan, an avid fan of the National Football League, and understanding the complexities of play calling is as big as the gulf between kindergarten and college, it ain't anywhere close to that. I'm sorry, it's not. There are a lot of fans out there that know a hell of a lot about football. I mean, really, X's and O's, why things are done. Do they understand every route concept and everything that's going on? Of course not. But it's not that far removed. I mean, a kindergartner, come on. I mean, I understand. He's trying to make a point. But I don't think the complexity is that difficult to grasp. It wouldn't take long, I think, for an avid, intelligent fan, if they were brought into, you know, the meeting room and watching things, they would understand and grasp it. And certainly, I'm sure there are things they don't understand about it. But at the same time, I don't think, you know, oftentimes common sense is the right sense. I heard the same things about Gene Smith the first year. You don't know more than Gene Smith. He was here for 20 years as a scout. He knows more than you. What are you kidding me? How can you know more than him? Well, how do people feel about that now, right? I mean, it happens long enough. Sure. He's like, well, you know what? Maybe those people were right to begin with, and the rest of them grudgingly came along, and I get it. Look, whatever. It's over. It's done with. Just go beat Miami. Nobody's going to give
right.
a rat's behind.
Look, I think play calling is difficult. I think it's a difficult thing to do. It's made a lot easier when you have the right pieces in place and your quarterback's playing really well and guys are catching the ball when, I don't know, it hits their hands. Those kind of things. It makes it a little bit easier to call plays in a game. I think it's a difficult thing to do. I also think that football people want you to believe what they do is a lot harder than it is. And that fans are a lot more ignorant of things about the game than they actually are. I believe that's part of it too. And there's a reason fans criticize play calling at times. I don't think it's particularly fair with this week's game, but I think it's something to keep an eye on going forward, especially if they're going to continue to struggle in the air as they are. For me, it's more about the personnel on the field not making plays this week, and that may mean that Brian Walters and other guys need to get expanded opportunities.
Brian Walters reference.
You're kidding me? I'm surprised he held back the tide of social media that we get on Brian Walters.
I'm not
Walters.
Saying he should start, but if they're going to keep dropping the ball, put the guy in that doesn't.
I understand that, but at the same time, there's a reason Brian Walters is, you know, he's not big. Is he?
I know.
You know what I mean? I mean, there are reasons the guy is a fourth or fifth receiver. Yes, he has good hands. I'm not doubting that. And these guys do need to do better, but their potential if they were to hit their ceiling worth the potential, I think we all agree, is a lot higher.
It's higher than Brian
right.
Walters.
Right,
sure.
That's all. And look, you're trying to develop that potential. You're still a young team. You just drafted these guys for the most part or brought them in as undrafted free agents last year in the case of Allen Hurns. And, you know, it's not a wise policy, I don't think, to go willy-nilly switching it around that quickly. Now, you can say Allen Hurns had issues with drops last year. Is it that quickly? Well, overall, I'll take Allen Hurns at the moment over Brian Walters. Although Brian Walters, you know, I'm not down. I'm not knocking the guy. I just think those guys have higher ceilings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you know, I think what you see Brian Walters. Do they try to go for receivers a little bit? You know, let's see what the next layer of Greg Olsen's game plan is. You know, what kind of things did he want to call last week that they didn't get to because of, you know, down, distance, score, et cetera. So, you know, if you see Walters out there, it's probably because there's three other guys out there with him. You know, Hurns' thing, the drops stink, but he also does so many other good things.
Grant, that, and know, that's what I'm saying,
and,
right?
And I think that's what the next step is for Allen Robinson, is I want to see some of those explosive plays. And he had one – over the middle. We also had that drop, so you can't go 1-1.
No question. Yeah,
whereas
about
I, Alan Hearns the other day probably went one drop and three good catches. That's still a bad percentage.
The Jaguars will beat Miami if what?
If T.J. Yeldon goes over 100 yards and they are plus two in turnover.
Plus two. All right. That's a good, that's certainly one of the key indicators. I think one of the big things, and Tony and I will talk about this tomorrow, make our predictions. David Garrard will join us on tomorrow's show, is just make the easy plays, right? I mean, don't make it harder on yourself. Great if they can get some turnovers, no question about it. Don't throw the blatant pick six. You know, you're going to throw some interceptions. The other one, nobody's complaining about it. Those plays happen in the National Football League. So make the easy catches. Make the short tackles when the opportunity presents itself with the guys short of the sticks. Get the other offense off the field. Just do the simple things well, because they don't have that margin for error right now.
They don't, and you know, even when they get some of their guys back, it's going to be very small margin anyway. So, you know, just it's you know, I'd do some things that with tempo. Another thing that I'm going to mention on Sunday is I like to see Dan Scuda as a pass rusher on third down right away. He seemed to win his matchup. Opposite whoever, Smith, Clemens, you know, Ryan Davis inside. So, this second game, you sort of get a feel for how they're going to deploy their people. And those are some of the things I'd do.
All right, we'll look for that, and we will look for your coverage, of course, in the Florida Times Union and those digital pages at jacksonville.com. Ryan O'Halloran on Twitter, simply at Ryan O'Halloran. Thanks, man.
All right, fellas.
We'll see you next week. There he goes. For Fat Tony, for Ryan O'Halloran, I'm Mike Dempsey. We're wrapping things up. Thanks to the Fan Feedback Spotlight, brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, every day here on Jaguars Today, asking fans what drives you. So, for Joe Fortunato and Tyler Devitt and all the aforementioned, we've got XL Primetime coming up. Don't forget, 2 o'clock this afternoon, Fat Tony and myself with the FanDuel Fantasy Forecast coming your way. You want to get a little DFS action, daily fantasy sports. You want to talk about your season-long, week-to-week league. We can do that as well. It's coming up this afternoon in just a couple of hours. That does it for Jaguars Today. Signing off from Everbank on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now, Duval, give me two claps and a Rick Flip.
Woo! That's great job!